It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me, Mike Coffey from IndyNation.com, as Ed, the rumors about him having a real job are true. So he couldn't butt out today and make it happen.
Well, I'm glad one of us does anyway.
Yeah, at least. Exactly. So, Coffey, interestingly, last week you kind of nailed it on the head, and I'm curious in doing so because, you know, I thought it was a possibility. I just didn't think they were going to do it, but they did do it, and lo and behold, thank God they did it in terms of what we saw. Timing-wise, you know, in hindsight, you now look at it, and you might have argued that, well, it's pretty obvious that they could have done this move against Ball State, or maybe not even Ball State, but certainly Vanderbilt. But they didn't, and now we're moving ahead. You got tomorrow. I assume, like you would, that he's going to start tomorrow. But what I'm curious is, what do you think the chances are that Wimbush gets into the game plan no matter what happens in the first couple series? Or is it part of the game plan right now today?
Well, I certainly hope that the coaches find a way to get Brandon Wimbush involved in a way that is beneficial to him both as a player currently and as a future player wherever he ends up playing. I don't think anybody looks at Brandon Wimbush and says, that's an NFL talent. But there's options for him after graduation, and I hope whatever they do for him helps him maximize that. I mean, if nothing else, he's been the good soldier here trying to do what he can do. But I think the main limitation, I think what I said last week, was if you're going to run the Brian Kelly offense, Ian Book is the guy you want. And I heard a stat this week that really drove that point home for me. I was listening to Power Hour on Irish Sports Daily, and one of the guys quoted a stat that said last week Ian Book threw 10 passes that were caught behind the line of scrimmage, some various form of a screen, be it wide receiver, inside run, whatever. Of those 10 passes, he completed 10 of them for 130 yards. So he was perfect on those passes for more than 100 yards. And that's the kind of play that Brian Kelly's offense needs to run, because he considers plays like that to be running plays. So instead of having counters and stuff like that, he has those behind-the-line passes, those screens that the blocking are supposed to open up. And if your quarterback cannot complete those passes with a reasonable degree of accuracy, then the offense is going to bog down. And I think that's what we saw a lot. We didn't see it as much versus Michigan, though, probably in the second half. But we saw it a lot versus Ball State. We saw it a lot versus Vanderbilt, where the offense just could not get going because Brandon Wimbush didn't have the touch on those passes to get positive yardage on them. Ian Book has that touch. He has that vision, and he can get the ball to those guys in space where the receivers, the running backs, whoever can make those things happen. So if Ian Book has got to be your quarterback for this offense to work, but I really hope they find a place for Wimbush situationally, positionally, whatever they can do to help him progress as far as he can reasonably, because I think if nothing else, he's earned that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I also think that, you know, the body of evidence proves it. You look at what happened last Saturday, and, you know, just as you said, and I saw that same stat, it is kind of a big deal when you do get the ball out there and it's on target and it's quick and it's got a spiral. And, you know, that 130 yards translates because of those things. And when you're throwing the ball low so that a guy's got to go down and grab it and then come up, he just lost a half second. And you think that is a half second, that doesn't matter. No, it does matter.
Oh, it absolutely
because
does.
you're asking your wide receiver to sustain a block for even longer. And, you know, these are all the kinds of things that goes into this that, you know, that it's just the average user doesn't tend to see on the field. But this is, you know, the reality of the moment. And the only thing I would caution against, and I see this a lot in college football fans, you know, everybody seems to think that you're only as good as last Saturday. And not only that, but whatever happened last Saturday dictates what's going to happen the rest of the season, right?
True.
So take a look at Old Dominion and Virginia Tech. By that standard, Virginia Tech should lose every single game they play the rest of the season.
Well, if that happens, it's not going to be because of Old Dominion, but it's going to happen because they lost their quarterback and their best pass rusher. I think that's going to go much further way along. But I do completely agree with what you said. With one little tweak, I think the Wake Forest game was a success and a resounding success in the same way that Ball State and Vanderbilt were, albeit wins, were failures in that you're playing a team that you outmatch in so many facets of the game, you're going to win. The win is not what matters. What matters is your ability to prepare your team for down the road, get your players into situations, and get them experience so that later when you're playing someone that maybe you won't necessarily walk over, these guys are in a position to help you. They weren't able to do that against Vanderbilt and Ball State because they weren't able to get out to enough of a lead where the coaches felt comfortable putting these guys in. The benefit of Wake not only was the lead, but also Wake's offense, where they try to hit you with play after play after play and not give you a chance to rest. I want to say it was, I don't know if it was Brian Kelly or who it was who said, they talked about how their substitutions were almost like hockey shifts, where like entire lines were going in and out, trying to keep guys fresh, but it also got guys experience. So by the time we got into the third, fourth quarter, you're seeing underclassmen who really haven't had a chance to consistently play get some good minutes against, now granted, not great competition, but it's still game minutes in a situation where you want to try to keep a lead. You want to try to show that you're deserving of more playing time when the chips are down. And everyone got that opportunity this time around, which I thought was great.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. You know, I back to the whole Wimbush thing. Here's a scenario that I could see that I do think makes some sense. First and foremost, Wimbush obviously is a hell of a talent when it comes to his ability to put pressure on the defense with his legs. I mean, that's no doubt about it. I don't want to diminish his passing as if it's not any good whatsoever, because it is. And in a certain situation where we need a set of three downs or a set of two series, right, it's very conceivable that the coaching staff has a set of plays scripted right now that he could easily run that would, in fact, get us that. And it's because of what he brings to the table with his legs and his ability to do maybe the simple reads, right? It's either I'm either throwing it here or here, or I'm running the football. And I think that's something that may come to fruition tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise me at all if that does happen. And I don't see it as a bad thing. Although I do think that, you know, what we did learn is that Ian Book is totally capable of running this offense for four straight quarters and do it pretty well.
Absolutely.
Now, how that translates, because he did face the 117th defense in the nation, I think after we were done with them, they were. But the truth is, this is a totally different football game. This is a totally different atmosphere. This is a totally different situation. And so I still think there's a bit on the table to figure out with Ian Bush based on what happens tomorrow in that kind of an atmosphere.
Yeah, that's true. As has been pointed out in a couple places, given the uptick in quality of opponent, the offense could play better and yet have fewer yards and fewer points because, I mean, the people they're going up against are much, much better than the guys that they face down in Wake. So I think the important thing for this game is to maintain the confidence level. I think, no, and the advantage there, we've seen Ian Book in pressure situations before. He played in the bowl game. Notre Dame was behind, and he was there taking the snaps, trying to get things done. So a difficult opponent is not a new thing for him. So that's certainly going to be a plus. Now, What he's able to accomplish, I'm not sure. I see what you mean about the progression of plays for Wimbush. The only concern I have there is as much as Wimbush can make opponents pay for things with his legs, those opponents are watching his legs with one eye and his arm with the other, because while he may not necessarily be an effective passer, he in his position, he still can pass. So it's, if you're a linebacker out in coverage and you see Wimbush heading towards the line of scrimmage, you can't just automatically leave your guy and come up and try to make the stop. You have to be cognizant of the fact that he could flip the ball over to you. If he's in a running back position or he's in a play where that's less of a concern, and now they're looking at now they're looking with both eyes at his legs, that may make him less effective. I'm not saying it will, I'm saying it might. So as much as I want them to make as much of a future for Wimbush as they can, that can't come, they cannot sacrifice the forward progress of the team to do so, as much as I don't want to say that.
Yeah, no, I think I see what you're saying, and I tend to agree with you. And the only point I'll just finish with is I think that there literally is a justification and a strategy for injecting him where it makes sense. And that where it makes sense is they literally could script out four straight plays that they're going to run no matter what, because all four plays will set up Wimbush to apply some pressure, sure, either with his feet or the assumption that, you know what, we know damn well that they're going to have both eyes on his feet and forget about the pass, and lo and behold, he slips behind, just like you said. Mm-hmm. So that won't surprise me, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. One other thing, just to debunk really quick, because you brought it up, and I just dawned on me when you said it, but the situation's a little, you know, it's been unique in college football this season because we're dealing with something I don't think we thought we were going to be talking much about, but that is good players that get four games in that all of a sudden are now, mm-hmm, looking to transfer.
Exactly.
Right? Well, in Woodbush's case, that doesn't actually translate, simply because he is going to graduate, right? Which means the graduate rule kicks in, mm-hmm, which means it doesn't matter how many games he plays this year. He can take that final year somewhere else as a graduate transfer, correct?
True. Now, I should know, and I'm kicking myself that I don't. I thought that he had sat out a year already, but I can't remember. So he's, again, I'm kicking myself for not knowing this off the top of my head. So he would be then a redshirt junior in the parlance of the rest
that's
of the
right.
universe.
That's
yeah,
correct.
So he would be more... he can play in as many games as he wants, and if he wants to switch to another school next year where he has a better chance to start and play, then that's what happens. I think I have no issue with him doing what he needs to do to give himself the best career that he can. I think that, and on the flip side, I think the coaching staff gave him every opportunity to really make things work, and for whatever reason, it's not gelling. And we can talk about quarterback progressions under Brian Kelly or whatever, that's a different discussion. But I would say I think that he has been given an opportunity, and so I do not fault either side if Brandon Wimbush decides at the end of the season, you know, I think I have a chance at a post-college career, and doing X gets me towards that, so I'm going to do it. I think that'd be a good thing for him, and maybe a good thing for Notre Dame as well.
Yeah, and I don't think you can ever fault a kid for that. I mean, I would never in a million years fault anybody, including Malik Zaire and everybody else, mm-hmm, that wanted to take that shot. I mean, I think you're absolutely – it's your prerogative to do that. It makes sense. I would say that in Wimbush's case, who knows, right? Because the season can unfold in a bunch of different ways, including Book getting hurt. So not that that's going to happen, but – but the fact of the matter is, we don't know what's going to happen over the next, you know, eight games. There's a lot of football left.
Can I just remind you that when the last time you talked about injuries in the preseason show, the next day we lost Shane Crawford.
Exactly, it's Friday. Somebody's going to get hurt in the walk to mass tomorrow.
Knock on something. Jeez, like bad luck Schleprock over
there. I hear you. Yeah, I definitely hear you. Hey, so just wanted to finish off with these final points and was curious what you thought. I mean, you know, when I look at the game, I think to myself, all right, there's two things that I'm going to look for that's going to dictate a win for us tomorrow. One, the real obvious one, turnovers. I think if we don't turn the ball over, I don't see Stanford beating us. I really don't. But the other one I think is a little bit different. I'm curious what you think. I also think the second key is going to be keeping Stanford out of the red zone. And specifically what I mean there is we can't allow these guys to drive the football down the field and get in a position where all of a sudden they can create that matchup nightmare and they're throwing to a guy 6'5" against Nick Coleman. Or
no, absolutely. That's
believe me, it'll be one of the 6'5" guys without Julian Love on them. And that could be a real problem for us. So in order to avoid that situation, you got to keep them out of the red zone, which means our defense is going to have to come up with some key stops in between that 20 and 20 zone so that they don't get inside of
it. No, I agree. I think the front seven is going to be under a lot of pressure in this game because we're operating at a disadvantage height-wise, their receivers and tight ends versus our wideout, versus our backfield, and pressure and containment is going to be paramount. I mean, I think keeping Love bottled up will definitely help, but I think all the I think guys like Tavon Coney's really going to have the game of his life, I think, because he's going to have to know not only he's going to have to know where he has to help. He's going to have to know do I need to help up near the line, do I need to help the backfield? And he'll have an assignment on every play, of course, but he really needs to have his head on a swivel and know where the ball and almost have like a preternatural sense of where the ball is going, because it's going to be crucial that the front seven keep Love contained and really keep all the backfield contained, because the disadvantage on the back end can only be negated by really not only the cornerbacks playing out of their minds, but the quarterback for Stanford making mistakes. And we need them to make more mistakes than we do, because it's going to be tough to do. As you said, these red zone plays are going to be, I mean, once they get like inside the 20, inside the 15, like jump balls to the back of the end zone, those are going to be really, really hard to defend with this group.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. You know, I do think you mentioned it, and certainly bottling up Love is going to be key. But I will tell you that I am a little nervous because he's kind of due to break one. You know, when you do bottle him up, it's the defense flying fast to him and then breaking down under control so that you don't whiff on him, right? Well, the problem is all it takes is one of those missed tackles. And he gets free, and all of a sudden, with his elite speed, you just aren't going to catch him. And so my only fear is, you know, he rattles one of those off. And you know, 7 points is going to be a big difference in this football game. So hopefully, as you said, we're able to contain him. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, that the way we're going to do that is Tavon Coney's going to have a big game. There's just no doubt about it. And if he delivers like he has been, we're going to be okay, but you're right. He's going to have to really come
to
play.
The holding penalty clock is now at, 16 quarters and counting, where no Notre Dame defensive lineman has yet been held. And
that first series of the game was where they could have easily thrown the flag, and they didn't.
Easily. Oh, it's getting ridiculous. Although, as someone reminded me this week, I don't think we've seen a Notre Dame offensive lineman called for holding either. And I don't know how, but then again, they're not playing. I mean, other than against Michigan, they haven't really played great defenses. So I don't know. This is, maybe it really just isn't a point of emphasis this year. Maybe I don't know. I can't think of a reason. I don't know if I've ever seen
this. I've watched some other games and I've seen it. So, I mean, seen it in terms of I've seen holding not being called. So I did catch a couple other games that I was watching, and I do think they've gotten a little lax on that all around college football, and generally what that means is we're going to get the worst.
Yeah, true.
Because it's always that way. But it does seem like that, for some reason, college football is kind of laying off that particular role. All right, give me your prediction. What do you expect to happen?
That reminds me, I got to go make my prediction over in our contest. I think I think Notre Dame's offense is better than people think it is, and I don't think Stanford as a team is as good as people think it is. So my prediction for this game is going to be Notre Dame 30, Stanford 20.
All right, not bad. And I think that there's a shot at that. I'm not as optimistic as you. I think it's going to be 31-27, and it's going to be tight. And I do think that Love is going to break one deep for some reason. I don't know. I think he's just due. But, you know, I think you're definitely on to something. And I think from Saturday's game, there's clearly that potential. I think this is going to be the turning point in the season for this football team. I think if we somehow win this game Saturday, there's going to be some big-time momentum they can capitalize on. Obviously, Virginia Tech's going to be a tough, tough game. And not a gimme in light of what happened with Old Dominion, and even though they lost their quarterback. The reality of the matter is this is a very, very critical game, and I just think that if somehow these guys can pull this out, it's going to bode well for the rest of the season.
I think barring any high-level injury, knock on my wooden desk, I think that this is Notre Dame's last chance for a loss this season. Because I think they're going to win the rest of their games. So this is the game that's going to decide. Because a one-loss team, based on how the back end of the schedule is now looking with Florida State and Southern Cal kind of tanking a bit, I think this is going to be their chance to establish something with the voters. And a one-loss Notre Dame team I don't think is going to make the playoffs, but an undefeated Notre Dame team will. And this is the game that is that's going to decide that.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree with you, even though it's still early in the season. But the truth of the matter is, you look at the schedule, and there's not a lot of makeup room if we do lose on Saturday. And as tough as it was for us last time around with one loss to get into the playoffs with one of the toughest schedules in the nation, you're right. I just don't see it happening. There's just no way, not with a loss, not with the way the schedule plays out. So all the more reason why this game's going to be that critical in determining what happens. Well, let's hope we get lucky. I'll be there for the game again, so at least I'm 1-0 this year.
All right, let's go for two.
Maybe that'll
make it
two. Right. Hopefully that plays out. Awesome. All right, good deal. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.